This is Monitor 68. I'm your host, Ted Steele. Linda Sutter has some comments on the situation today in this transition period between administrations and what the future may hold.
Despite the student demonstrations that have plagued him throughout his term in office, Lyndon Johnson is deeply interested in young people and in involving them more significantly in the government. In fact, last May, he called on the White House Fellows Association, which is composed of young people who've been chosen each year to work at the highest level of government, to develop a plan for making the governmental process more available to participation by more young people. After 5 months of research, the White House Fellows have developed not just one, but several plans, which they've included in a report to the President on the federal government and the youth community. The premise of this report is that there is a serious gap between youth and government, a gap filled on both sides with ignorance, distrust, and frustration. According to the report, this gap has developed because this country is undergoing enormous and constant shifts in values and beliefs, and institutions can't keep up. Young people who feel restless and caught between new values and old institutions are fighting to change the institutions, either through participation, like all the kids who worked for McCarthy, or if that fails, through confrontation, as happened at the Democratic Convention and is happening at universities. The report suggests several steps the government might take to utilize the idealism and the energies of these young people. One is that the president appoint a special assistant on youth, someone young who can serve as the president's listening post on the young. Another is a National Advisory Commission on Youth, which would research problems like the draft and would be able to implement its findings. The report suggests a thorough reevaluation of the role of young people already in the government, as well as a variation of the White House Fellows Program on the state and local level. The president was pleased with the report. He called it excellent. And in fact, he'd acted on a good part of it to the extent that he could. He'd already had for some time a brilliant young advisor on youth, although she's not called that officially. He'd already directed the civil service to conduct an unprecedented reevaluation of young people in the government, and he's already suggested to the governors and mayors that they try out something like the White House Fellows Program. All in all, very encouraging. Except Lyndon Johnson has only 8 weeks more to be president, and no one knows what will become of all these ideas after he leaves. This is Linda Sutter reporting on this younger generation for Monitor.
A very interesting and important subject, not only for the young, but for all of us. And judging by President-elect Nixon's recent statements concerning his desire for more young people to participate in government, I'm sure he's very much aware that America's investment in young people and young people's investment in America is always a bipartisan goal. Here's a group that must always be considered when new sounds are discussed, the Sandpipers.
You keep what you're feeling inside, all buried and boxed up inside. The love that you're feeling inside, the pity you're feeling inside. Society tells you stay cool, the shot you would let out, hold back. You're right now, but right now, hold back. Be practical, Jack, and hold back. You feel like you're busting inside. Your heart's in a desperate divide.
Why?
Hold back.
Why?
Hold back.
Why?
Hold back.
Why?
Let's go. Let the world know you're alive. Let the world know you believe. Let the world know you have love.
I guess that's a good description of the way the Army and Navy boys approach the big game. You already know the results of today's Philadelphia story, Army 21, Navy 14. But did you know that the series started 78 years ago this weekend on a makeshift field at West Point and before a crowd that barely outnumbered the total number of players on both squads that afternoon? Incidentally, Navy won that first game 24 to nothing. Hold that line, because you're on the Monitor Beacon. Ted Steele here with a 4M announcement that's pronounced M for Monitor, M for Music. M.M. from Marilyn May.
Feeling good, feeling fine, feeling groovy all the time. Ain't it great just to be feeling? Feeling lost, feeling low, feeling helps to let you know you're alive. Be glad you're feeling.
Member of President Johnson's White House staff, where he certainly learned that the world is filled with critics and second-guessers. Now he's president of the Motion Picture Association of America, and, as he told Monitor's Betty Grobley, has some very definite ideas about the influence of movie critics.
Jack, can a well-known critic destroy a movie commercially?
No.
Is the impact
so
great?
The answer is no, but I think a critic with the circulation can harm a picture when it begins to open. Now, if the picture was sort of a so-so picture to begin with, it could drown. But if the picture has legs of its own, if it has an audience that it's reaching for, that would find it interesting and be responsive to it, the answer is no. In a survey recently taken, we found that the greatest asset a picture could have is word of mouth. One person tells another. And when you try to probe the moviegoer to find out what prompted him to go to see a film or to stay away, the critic comes up for third or fourth on the list. But the biggest, of course, is word of mouth. And the fact that your neighbor said, "Oh, you've got to see that picture, it's wonderful." And no matter what any critic would say, most people will use their neighbors as a higher critic than they will anybody else.
Well, then why is there such fear?
Well, it's the same thing that happens to men in high places. You don't like to have, number one, people say bad things about you. Number two, you are not quite certain what influence this critic might have commercially on your picture. Number three, you never know how many other critics in the country will pick up what this influential critic said. So all of these little dangers and warning signs tingle through you and cause you to have sleepless nights and cause you to mutter invectives sometime against the critic.
We've been talking with Jack Valenti, who is president of the Motion Picture Association of America.
Monitor's Betty Grobley, going to the movies with the top man of the industry, Jack Valenti. Now, monitor on stage star performances at leading clubs and theaters around the world. And in the spotlight, the singer who shook him up right from the start and is still the fastest hip in the West, Elvis Presley.
And I love you so. Love me tender, love me true. All my dreams fulfill. For my darling, Iraq, I love you. And I always will. Love me tender, love me long. Take me to your heart. For you said I belong, and we'll
see and hear more of Elvis this Tuesday night on his NBC TV special. NBC Radio's new weekday afternoon show, Now, is really swinging along these days and increasing the tempo. Here's a preview of the guest list that host Roscoe has for next week. Chad Mitchell, who's now carving out a new career. Genevieve Waite, who didn't have a thing to wear in her new movie, Joanna. Author John Gabrie, who throws a few rocks at the world of rock and roll. And there are more. Try it now for up-to-the-minute listening. NBC Radio, weekday afternoons. Right now on monitor, a regional report from Pittsburgh on the Santa situation.
Like the three rivers that converge to form the center of the city, Pittsburgh Santa Clauses come from many different directions and walks of life. Some of the Santas employed by the major department stores are retired workers, but farmers, mill workers, and university students also don the beard, boots, and baggy red breeches. One Pittsburgh Santa practices for the job of lifting 5 to 6 squirming youngsters a minute by working the graveyard shift at one of the area's steel mills. A retired police officer now spends his Yuletide season wearing the beard instead of the badge, and it's not known whether or not he advises the kids of their constitutional rights. In a city that has seen more than its share of labor difficulties, the Pittsburgh Santa situation is a glowing example of ideal labor-management relations. Most of the major department stores don't advertise for Santa Clauses. Every year around Thanksgiving, last year's Santas just appear and reclaim their thrones. Pittsburgh Santas earn anywhere from $85 to $120 a week for the season. At one store, the fringe benefits include 2 pair of white gloves, freshly laundered underwear daily, and a generous supply of Sensen. After all, with business so brisk, Santa can't be expected to brush and gargle after every youngster. Here in Pittsburgh, Santa's workshop is solidly in the male domain. No female Santa Claus has ever applied for the job. Although only one black Santa Claus is employed at a dime store in one of the city's ghettos, racial tensions have not been allowed to sour the Christmas spirit. The Pittsburgh NAACP currently conducting a campaign to get more black faces in newspaper and television ads has decided that the twinkle in St. Nick's eye is more important to youngsters than the color of his skin. Joe Taylor, NBC News, Pittsburgh.
Sounds Rembrandt Square by the man that music men are beginning to call the new Billy Maxted. Say, did you see the story about what the Australians are doing to make this a better world? They've invented the Pekini, a see-through bra made of transparent plastic. Well, those who are supposed to know about the way of a man with a maid say that love happens when the eyes meet. But with this Pekini, that moment may never occur. Unless, of course, it's an ambitious man who has the willpower to raise his sights. Now let's raise our sights to what's happening today. NBC News on the Hour next. I'm Ted Steele, your host and monitor.
The more we hear, the more we learn. To keep well informed is a major concern.